Beloved Buddha, on one occasion, when a monk asked Kaiozan the meaning of Bodhidharma coming from the West, Kaiozan drew a circle in the air and put the character for Buddha inside it. This left the monk without words. At another time, Kaiozan was living in Sekitai Temple in Kyushu. A monk came up to him and said, "Master, do you know Chinese characters?" "As far as befits my position," responded Kaiozan. The monk then circled Kaiozan once in the anti-clockwork direction and asked him, "What character is this?" Kaiozan drew the character for the number 10. Then the monk walked around him in a clockwise direction and asked what character that was. Kaiozan changed the figure 10, which looks like a plus sign, into a swastika. The monk then drew a circle and pretended to hold it in both his hands and asked Kaiozan, "What character is this?" At which Kaiozan drew a circle around the swastika. The monk then pretended to be Rukika, the last of the 1,000 Buddhas of the present Kalpa, at which Kaiozan commented, "That is right. That is what all the Buddhas have kept. You also, I also, take care of it."
Manisa, I'm feeling so light just by dropping a single word. I feel I can fly like a swan to the eternal snows of the Himalayas. That small word I had chosen as a challenge to this country's whole past. 30 years I carried that word. There are so many Hindu scholars, Shankaracharyas, Jaina monks, neither one of had the courage to challenge me on the word. Perhaps they were aware that to challenge me on the word will be an exposure of the whole Hindu structure of society, which is the ugliest in the world. But the man who wrote the Manu Smriti, five or perhaps 7,000 years before, is still ruling the Indian mind. He was called Bhagwan Man because he gave the morality and the character to Hindu society. The Hindu society is one of the most spiritually enslaved society. Its slavery consists in its caste system. The caste system is the ugliest you can conceive. It also puts woman as an inferior creature, is spiritually incapable of being enlightened. Gautama the Buddha rebelled against the caste system. That was his great crime. In his presence it was impossible to argue with him. He was not a man of argument, but of existential presence. Scholars, pandits, Brahmins approached him, but his very climate was enough to silence them. They could not manage courage enough to ask this man's single-handed rebellion against the most ancient society in the world. Just because of this, I conceive Gautama the Buddha in the whole past of human history, the only single man who knew what freedom is. Yesterday you have witnessed a historical moment. I have accepted Gautama Buddha's soul as a guest, reminding him that I am a non-compromising person, and if any argument arises between us, am the host and you are the guest. You can pack your suitcases. But lovingly and with great joy, he has accepted a strange host. Perhaps only a strange man like me could do justice to a guest like Gautam the Buddha. 25 centuries ago, he was the most liberated, but 25 centuries, so much water has flown down the Ganges. It is a totally new world of which he knows nothing. With great respect, he will have to depend on me to encounter the contemporary situation. He understood it immediately. His clarity of vision has remained as pure all along these 25 centuries. I am blessed to be a host of the greatest man of history. And you are also fortunate to be a witness of a strange phenomenon. As Gautam Buddha died, the Brahmins, the priesthood, which has been a curse to this country, destroyed everything that Buddha has created. All those beautiful roses were burnt alive. There were three categories of people: those who were enlightened simply left the country, to convert the whole Far East those who were not enlightened either suffered death or were forced to become part of the Sudras. It was one of the great contributions of Dr. Ambedkar to discover that the Chamars, the shoemakers, are really Buddhists who have been reduced to make shoes by the Hindu priesthood. At the risk of life, the poor fellows preferred this utter humiliation and indignity. But Buddhism disappeared completely from its own land. You will not believe how revengeful is the priesthood. They burned the Bodhi tree under which Gautam Buddha had become enlightened. Even the tree could not be tolerated. The tree that exists now in Bodh Gaya is not the original tree. It was just a coincidence. Before the original tree was destroyed by the Brahmins, a great emperor Ashoka became interested in Gautam Buddha and his awakening. He is the only great emperor who lived like a Bodha Bhikshu, who begged his food in his own capital. He cut a branch of the original tree and sent his own daughter Sanghamitra to Ceylon to plant the tree and to plant the seeds of Buddha's great awakening in Sri Lanka, just after India became liberated. Jawaharlal Nehru, the first Prime Minister of this country, was in immense love with Buddha. He asked that a branch from Sri Lanka should be brought back. It is a far away descendant of the original tree under which Gautam Buddha became enlightened, but yet it carries the same juice. So the tree that you see now in Bodh Gaya is not the original tree. The original has been burned. Such is the revengeful attitude of all priesthood around the world. I wanted the Hindu priesthood to challenge me on the word Bhagwan, But knowing me perfectly well, they simply avoided the challenge because it was going to expose all their incarnations of God . You will not believe what kind of criminals have been called Bhagwan by Hindus. As an example, I would like to tell you, Parasuram is one of the incarnations of Hindu gods. His old father was, according to the Hindu scriptures, was a great seer, but I don't think that is right. Because a great seer will not be suspicious of his wife. A great seer transcends all these small desires and longings, jealousies. I will call that man not a seer, but one of the most blind persons. Because he was suspicious that when he goes to the river early in the morning, in the dark, the moon god comes to have a love affair with his wife. Such idiots . Moon is not a god. It is just a piece of this planet. But he ordered his son Parasuram that until you cut the head of my wife, your mother, my suspicion and my jealousy will go on burning like fire in my heart. Parasuram, without asking what are the reasons of jealousy, and a man like you is not supposed to be jealous, and in this old age, he simply went and cut the head his own mother. Just because his obedience to the father, howsoever irrational and stupid, Hindus have called him Bhagwan. I never had any desire to belong to this category of criminals. Yesterday, dropping that word, I have disconnected myself with this land, its ugly heritage, its slavery, one friend has asked that I refer Tulsi as Hindu. Was it a mistake? Or do I mean it? I am not any infallible pope. But that was not a mistake. I mean it. Jainism never could become an independent religion. It depends for all its necessities on Hindus. It is only a philosophy, not a religion. A Hindu cult, but not a culture. No Jaina will be ready to make shoes. No Jaina will be ready to clean toilets. What kind of culture is this? It is simply a small branch of Hindu heritage, maybe differing on few philosophical points, but that does not make it a religion. So I called Acharya Tulsi with absolute awareness a Hindu. The people that Hinduism has been worshipping as gods, is so hilarious. Krishna is worshipped as the perfect God, and he is the man who forced this country into the greatest war India has ever known. It was an unnecessary massacre. It left the Hindu society without a spine. It became so afraid of war that it has been available to anybody to invade it. 2,000 years it has remained a slave country to a small barbarous tribes. This vast continent, but nobody wanted any violence. The mind of the whole country settled in a consolation of fatalism. If somebody is coming to invade, Mughals, Hunas, Turks, Mongols, anybody. This is the destiny. You cannot avoid it. It is better to accept it. It is destined by God . That's why even after the freedom from British Empire, 40 years have passed, and one wonders for what we had asked the freedom. Freedom has two wings, from and far. A freedom that is only from is not worth calling. A freedom has to be far something greater. But India continues to become more and more poorer, more and more uneducated. And the stupid politicians promise to the country that we are going to lead you into the 21st century. The country is not even in this century. It still lives according to Manu 7,000 years back. It still worships Krishna 5,000 years pass. It seems all that has to happen has happened for this land. It has no future. Its dark night has no dawn. By dropping the word Bhagwan, I have disconnected myself absolutely with an ugly tradition, inhuman, barbarous, creating a mind for slavery, uncreative in every sense, and in the name of spirituality, every kind of nonsense goes . Gautam Buddha has fought like a lion . I am immensely happy that he has chosen me. His area of fight was very small, just the state of Bihar in North India. My field of work is the whole world. I have to fight not only against the Hindu superstitions I have to fight with the Mohammedans, with the Christians. Alone. But with a great rejoicing, hoping that the courageous ones are going to join in my caravan. A fight at the time which is the most crucial. The world cannot be saved. These coming 12 years are going to be the last time for this beautiful planet to breathe, to blossom into flowers. My and your work is to find out the chosen people before the idiotic politicians destroy the world. Let us create as many Buddhas as possible, because they will be the only ones whose bodies may be destroyed, but whose souls will have wings to fly across the sun into the blue sky and dissolve with eternity, with joy, with dance, with gratitude. Manisha has that few beautiful sutras. Beloved Buddha, on one occasion, when a monk asked Kyozan the meaning of Bodhidharma's coming from the West, it is a traditional way containing many implications. Why Bodhidharma came from India to China? Certainly, the first implication is that India was no more receptive to the highest flight of consciousness of Buddha. Bodhidharma was in search of fresh ground, of new pastures. Kyozan drew a circle in the air and put the character for Buddha inside it. Without saying a word, just making a circle in the air and putting the Chinese character for Buddha inside it. Not a single word is spoken, but everything is said including that which cannot be said in any way. He is indicating that life is like a circle in the air. Very fragile. A writing on the sands on the beach. And a tidal wave comes and takes away all the writing. Or a wild breeze comes and disturbs everything that is written. Kaozan is saying that your life is even more illusory. Just a circle in the air. You cannot even see it. But inside the circle, a tremendous force of consciousness represented by the Buddha is hidden with all its splendor. Bodhidharma's coming to China was carrying the message that don't just waste your life on the circumference, which is nothing but a circle drawn in the air. Look inwards. Always remember that the difference between life and death is not much. Just few breathings, few heart beats missed. And you are no more in the body. But inside, in this ephemeral circle of air, is a very solid, immortal rock of the Buddha. Bodhidharma has come to China to carry the message for which India has become absolutely blind and unreceptive. This left the monk without words. He could see the great insight of Kaozan. At another time, Kaozan was living in Sesikai temple in Kosu. A monk came up to him and said, "Master, do you know Chinese characters? As far as befits my position," responded Kaozan, "I have to remind you that Chinese or Japanese or other far eastern languages don't have any alphabet. They have only characters. It is very difficult to understand those languages unless you are born, because you need to know at least thousands of characters to read even an ordinary newspaper. And those characters are very symbolic. One friend showed me a Chinese character I tried in every way to work out what this character could be. But I had to accept failure. The man said, it is a very simple character, but unless you know, there is no way to discover. Just a symbolic roof and two symbolic women. Neither you can figure out that these are women and this is the roof. And the man told me, this character means constant quarrel. Two women under one roof. But it also means battle, fight, war. He was learning Chinese for almost 30 years. Still, he was not confident enough about the ancient scriptures. So when the monk asked, do you know the Chinese characters? Kaozan responded, as far as befits my position. I cannot say I know Chinese characters. I can only say I know few characters which are needed for my work. The monk then circled Kaozan once in the anti-clockwork direction and asked him, what character is this? Kaozan drew the character for the number 10. One wonders, why number 10? Moving around you anti-clockwise, why it should mean 10? I have tried hard . My own understanding is all the languages of the world have 10 digits as the basic of their mathematics. And those 10 digits come from 10 fingers of man. Man started counting over the fingers. I still do. And whatever and howsoever hard I may try, at the most I reach to the third finger. By the time it is fourth, I have forgotten whether it is fourth or fifth. The character of anti-clockwise movement can simply mean that you will be reduced to the smallest number, that is 10. You cannot go further than that. If you want to go further, you will have to move clockwise. That is the way how existence is moving. Anti-clockwise, you will be stuck with your own fingers. Kaozan drew the character for the number 10. Then the monk walked around him in a clockwise direction and asked what character that was. Kaozan changed the figure 10, which looks like a plus sign, into a swastika. Swastika perhaps is the ancient most symbol in the world. It moves clockwise. When Adolf Hitler came to power, he wanted for his flag some ancient most symbol. He had sent his messengers to India, to Tibet, to China, and they all came to the conclusion that swastika is the ancient most symbol in the world. It means progress. It means being in tune with existence. It means victory. But the people who had brought this message from the eastern countries made the flag for Adolf Hitler, but forgot to make the swastika clockwise. They made it, but because it was unknown to them, they made it anti-clockwise. Now the people who understand in numerology, in symbology, say that Adolf Hitler's defeat is dependent on a wrong character of swastika on his flag. I will not go along with them. That is nonsense. Clockwise or anti-clockwise is not going to decide the fate of a war. But Kaizen is right in the sense that if you are in tune with existence, you may have the possibilities of your potential to come to a flowering. Don't go against the current. That way your defeat is certain. Go with the current. That way you are relaxed, rejoice, floating with the stream, and you will reach to the ocean, to the vast oceanic consciousness. The monk then drew a circle and pretended to hold it in both of his hands and asked Kaizen, "What character is this?" At which Kaizen drew a circle around the swastika. Swastika is the symbol of time, clockwise. But time is nothing but a mind projection. If there is no mind, there is no time. Do you think the bamboos around the Buddha auditorium know anything about time? Do you think the sun rises according to a clock? The whole existence goes on without having any sense of time. Time is a projection of human mind. Except in your watches and clocks, there is no time. Kaizen did well . He drew a circle in the air around the swastika, that too is in the air. He is saying all that our mind can do is made of the same stuff as dreams are made of. The monk then pretended to be Ruchika, the last of the 1,000 Buddhas of the present Kalpa, at which Kayozan commented, "That's right." This is the Buddhist mythology that every Kalpa means millions of years in which a world is born and dies. That is one Kalpa. This earth has been born 4 billion years before, and it seems most probably 12 years more. By the end of this century, every indication is that we are going to commit suicide. In this whole Kalpa, there are 1,000 Buddhas, and Ruchika, mythologically, is thought to be the last Buddha of the previous Kalpa. The monk then pretended to be Ruchika, the last of the 1,000 Buddhas of the present Kalpa, at which Kayozan commented, "That's right. That is what all the Buddhas have kept. You also, I also take care of it." The only thing to be taken care of is your innermost being, symbolized by the Buddhas. Lose everything and you lose nothing. Empires disappear in the air like soap bubbles. But don't lose your Buddha. That is your eternal treasure, your immortality, your master key to open all the mysteries of existence. Sosha wrote to wake alive in this world, what happiness, winter rain. Just suddenly in winter, when it is not expected, comes a rain cloud, showers creates so many rainbows, Sosha is saying to wake alive in this world where everything is mortal. What happiness! Winter rain. Every morning when you wake up, remember it. I have come across a man, well educated, a retired professor of mathematics, suddenly became very much afraid of sleeping. His family brought him to me. They said he is absolutely rational in everything. Except he does not like to sleep. And moreover, he goes on waking others in the family. He will knock on the doors of his daughter-in-law, "Are you awake?" Now just to answer him, her sleep is disturbed. And the whole night, what he will do? I asked him, "What is the fear? Why you don't want to sleep?" He said, "The fear is that if I go to sleep, what is the guarantee that I will wake up alive?" I said, "This is certainly a very significant problem. But who told you that you are alive?" He said, "I am not alive." I said, "As far as I see, you have been dead since you retired. You can sleep. You cannot lose anything. You are dead already." He said, "That solves the problem. All these people have been bothering me, sleep, but nobody could give the right answer. You convinced me. If I am dead already, who cares?" I went to see him next day morning. He was taking his breakfast. He welcomed me with great love and said, "It is a miracle. I awakened alive." And I said, "Remember, if you don't sleep, you will be dead. If you sleep, there is a possibility you may wake up alive." After 20 years, I went to the city back. He has become very old, and he said to me, Now I have come with a very different question. I want to die. I said, sleep well. One day it is certain, I can guarantee you, you will not wake up. The best place to die is the bed. 99% people die on the bed. That is the most dangerous thing. He said, my God, I have been sleeping on the bed. I said, you start sleeping on the mattress down on the floor. He said, what is that is going to do? I said to him that, remember, there is no way to avoid death. You can make every effort, and the best is not to go to the bed. The bed is very close to the cemetery. I have heard about an old Jew who was dying, a very rich man. His four sons were discussing, the old fellow is going to die, what to do about the funeral procession? The youngest son said, he always wanted to have a Rolls Royce. Poor fellow. Could not manage it, not because he had not the money, but he was very impossible to depart from his money. Once he got hold of it, then that money cannot be in any way used. But we can have for his funeral procession a Rolls Royce. At least once, one-way drive, he will not come back. The second son said, don't be stupid. What does it matter to a dead man whether he is riding the Rolls Royce or just a bullock cart? Unnecessary wastage. You are too young, you don't understand. The third son said, so you propose a bullock cart. My feeling is, we are four, we can carry him on our shoulders. Anyway, the cemetery is not far away. The old man was listening everything. He suddenly got up in the bed and said, where are my shoes? The son says, shoes? Are you going to die shoes on? He says, no, I simply want my shoes, because I am still alive enough to walk down to the cemetery. Listening to the great discussion that is going on, The cheapest way is but whatever you do, so-so is right. To wake alive again in this world, what happiness. Winter rain. Manisha has asked, beloved Buddha, Gautama the Buddha died by poisoning. You have survived in spite of being poisoned. Is there any connection between the two? Is there a particular significance in the timing of your declaration that Gautam Buddha is living on in you? Manisha, it is true Gautam Buddha died of poisoning. The fact is he was too old, 82 years, and tired, 42 years just walking from village to village. He could not fight back with the poison. But his work was incomplete. In fact, the work of a Buddha is always going to be incomplete. It is the intrinsic part of spreading the fire of awakening. You cannot conceive that the whole world will become awakened. But people like Gautam the Buddha are the dreamers of the impossible. They hope against hope. He had to leave because the body was tired and old and could not survive the poisoning. But he left with a dream that he may find somewhere someone to carry his dream of growing more lotuses in the world. These 25 centuries he have been wandering like a white cloud in search . It is my great destiny that he has chosen me to be his host. I will do In fact, I have been doing already the same kind of work of spreading awakening. Hence, it is not a problem to me. An ancient Buddha residing inside will certainly strengthen my work. You are asking about poisoning. Is there any connection? Certainly, seeing that I have come over the poisoning, which was far more dangerous than the poisoning that Buddha suffered, the poisoning has been a great purification for me. This purification makes me receptive. The wandering soul of Gautam Buddha, he is not a weight. He is rather more like wings. He is not the man to dictate anything. The pure agnostic, the most individualist, the utter rebel. I have been without knowing preparing a home, a shelter for a wandering Buddha. It is my fortune that he has accepted me to be his home for a few days at least. You are also fortunate to be the assembly of two Buddhas. A bridge is stretched between 25 centuries, so rich that if you miss, accept yourself, nobody will be responsible for it. It is time for Sardar Gurdayal Singh Gautam the Buddha may not be aware, because I don't find in his scriptures any sense of humor. But now, in this assembly, even a dead man will start laughing. Polanski, the Polak, applies for a job at the Pune Travel Agency. he tells them that he worked 3 years for Police Airways. The personal director calls Police Airways to see what kind of an employee Polanski was. His previous boss says, he is a meathead, a cheat, a dumb bunny, a busybody, a loafer, a bird brain, a sneak, a numb skull, a loud mouth, a fruit cake, a dodo, a chiseler, a bigot, a winnow, a lamb brain, a dunce, a boob, a banana head, an ass, a screwball, a dumb dumb, a nincompoop, a goofball, a dimwit, a pig, a hockey puck, a klutz, a dumb koof, a fuddy duddy, a dinga ding, a lass, a weirdo, a dunderhead, a maroon, a bungler, a mental midget, a turkey, a bloodsucker, a bully, a mutton head, a slave driver, a vulture, an imbecile, a tight wedge, a dingbat, a bragger, an animal, a putty head, a bitcher, a clown, and an idiot. Still, I recommend him for the job. Why on earth would you recommend him? Asked the personal director. Because the previous boss says he was our best employee. Jaime Goldberg is lying on the psychiatrist's couch. So what seems to be the problem? The shrink asks. Well, Doc, Jaime replies, for the past 2 months, every morning at 8:30, I take a huge shit. Really? Says the psychiatrist. After a moment's silence,
why millions of people would love to be that regular. So what is the problem? Well, Doc, Jaime replies, I don't get out of bed until 9. Marco is a newcomer to the country. Although he does not know the language well, he manages to meet Janet and dates her for several weeks. Then Janet invites Marco to her house for dinner. When he arrives, Janet introduces him to her father, then excuses herself and goes off to the kitchen to help her mother. Marco gathers up all his courage and says, Sir, I wanna ask for your daughter's gland. What? Cries the father, you mean you want my daughter's hand? No, says Marco, I'm fed up with hand jobs. Now I want the gland. The quiz show moderator says to the contestant, okay, Mr. Klump, and now for the $100,000 question, what is the difference between Ronald Reagan and a bucket of shit? Klump thinks for a second, then smiles knowingly and declares the bucket. Nivedana. Close your eyes, feel your body to be completely frozen. Now look inwards with your total consciousness and with an urgency as if this moment is going to be the last in your life. The center of your being is not far away. As you come closer, a strange coolness, a silence, it starts becoming deeper, a light that has no source. A blissfulness. Thousands of flowers starts raining on you. This moment you are the Buddha. This is your ultimate reality. The only character to be remembered is witnessing. Buddha consists only of witnessing. To make it clear, Nivedana, relax and just be a witness. You are not the body, you are not the mind, you are just a pure witness standing by the side. This witnessing is the very soul of a Buddha. The night was beautiful in itself. But 10,000 Buddhas melting into an oceanic consciousness has made the night a splendor, a miracle. Just remember one thing. When Nivedana calls you back, gather as much fragrance, as much existential juice, and persuade the Buddha to come along with you. Finally, he has to become your everyday action, gesture, word, silence, everything. The circumference of your life has to disappear, giving place to the center. This This is the greatest rebellion and the only living religiousness to bring Buddha into your ordinary life simply, innocently. Nivedana, come back with all the grace of a Buddha, with all the beauty and the joy. Sit for a few minutes just to recollect the golden path that you travel to reach to your center and the encounter with the Buddha and the experience of just pure witnessing is slowly that which looks a far away peak of consciousness will become your simple, ordinary being. That will be the most historical moment for you. Okay, Manish.